Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Today, we have with us Wesley Bush, author of the book, Product-Led Growth, How to Build a Product That Sells Itself.
Let's say you have a top-down selling strategy. It's typically you're going after the executives in companies. And that is a very traditional approach to growing your business, where you just try to go after the people at the top, because those are the decision makers. They're the people with the deep pockets. If you want to sell something expensive, you go after those people. But the bottoms-up approach is where we're seeing a lot of companies like Slack or Expensify use to really grow their business, because the decision maker has evolved. The reason why product-led growth adapts so well to a bottom-up selling strategy is because the person you are typically getting to use the free trial or freemium model is the end user. They're the ones using it, getting up to speed and understanding how to use it.
Our guest today, Wesley Bush, is from Canada and is author of the book, Product-Led Growth, How to Build a Product That Sells Itself. He's the founder and president of the Product-Led Institute, where he spends his days teaching SaaS businesses how to flip the traditional sales playbook and ignite their growth engine with the product-led growth methodology. Now, onto this great episode of Bits About Books with Wesley Bush. Hello, Wes. Welcome to Bits About Books. I really appreciate your making time early in the morning. Let's start at the beginning, because we have been conversing for a while, and I have seen the fantastic work you are doing, first with Traffic is Currency, then the PLG Summit that you did last year, and I thoroughly enjoyed. And then, of course, now the new avatar of Product-Led Growth Institute, right?
Yeah.
So I just wanted you to tell me a bit about how this change happened and what were you seeing as you were making this shift.
Yeah, so I guess for those that don't know, Traffic is Currency was the business I started a few years ago. And when I initially started, it was really just focused around helping SaaS companies grow. And so that was all well and dandy. But what I kept bumping into was just some incredible companies that were just growing without a sales team, growing extremely fast. And I started looking at what was driving these companies forward. And it was just one thing in common. They were using their product as the main vehicle to acquire, activate, and then even retain their customers. And so I just saw that there was going to be a new way to grow a SaaS organization. And so the, I guess, evolution of Traffic as Currency and now the rebrand with Product-Led Institute is really just trying to help more SaaS companies identify that, hey, there is this new way of growing your business. You don't have to hire this expensive sales team to grow your business. You can just use your product and it can do the majority of the work for you. But with that being said, it's far from easy and there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And so that's why I'm really doubling down on trying to help educate people through the Product-Led Institute.
Wonderful. So before we get onto the book, was this sort of triggered by what you did with Vidyard?
Yeah, to a big degree it was at the beginning, because I was previously in demand generation. And demand gen is a really interesting role in the sense that you're trying to create demand. And one of the things that I learned while working at Vidyard was just that there are a lot of different ways to grow. And there's the traditional way where you create content, you put up landing pages, and then you send those people automated emails until you hope one day they turn into a paying customer or they unsubscribe. And that is the traditional marketing playbook that so many companies use. And that's the one I started using because that's what everyone else was using. And it wasn't until we launched a freemium product at Vidyard that I really saw that we could acquire hundreds of thousands of users who could then onboard themselves, use the product, get up to speed all on their own. And the whole approach of, if we look back to the old marketing playbook where we're getting people to download white papers and guides, like the whole goal of that really at the end of the day was for people to use the product. And so with the freemium model, we just kind of shortcutted that relationship and said, hey, we're not going to show you this big guide how to do video marketing. We're actually going to show you. You're going to do it through actually using the product. And if you look at a lot of the products you use today, it doesn't actually lead with that same content marketing approach anymore. Like for instance, if you use Slack or even Skype, you didn't read this monumentally long white paper on how to communicate with other people. You just did it. And that's what a lot of products and companies are picking up on, is just that the way we use and even try products and the expectations we have behind them is really just starting with that product. And then we can figure out how to become an expert and read all the guides to dive deeper.
That's great. So I can also see the connect, you know. I mean, even for this to happen, you still need to bring those folks in front of the product. You still needed those 100,000 people to know about the Vidyard freemium product.
Yep, absolutely.
So that piece of the puzzle still remains. I mean, how you bring them there, that piece still remains to be done. It's only when they're there, the rest of the roadmap, if you will, changes.
Yeah, and I mean, like you can definitely promote a freemium product just like you would, let's say, a demo. But the thing that's a little bit different is that since you are giving away such a valuable product for free, if you set it up right, it just has natural word of mouth tendencies built into it most often. And so you'll find you'll often get to those numbers way quicker than you would just the sharing the demo link with everyone. Like I can't remember the last time, if ever, someone said, hey, check out this demo. No one does that. If people want to share the product, and like, it's just how the relationship works. Like we as humans look out for each other for the most part, especially if it's your friends or coworkers. You just want them to experience something cool. And that's how people share products. It's really that simple.
Yeah, I get it. So that brings me to the book. So what motivated this shift and the fact that you realized that this is the time I need to write the book?
Yeah. And so whenever I decided I wanted to write the book, it really was at a point where like I'd already created a course around product-led growth, and I just saw that there was no clear guide on how to really approach this new way of doing business. And whenever it came to, even when I was talking about that time at Vidyard and demand generation, I was just doing the same marketing playbook that everyone else was using at that point in time. And so there is so many playbooks out there for how to grow your business, but a lot of them are well established, whether it's your inside sales agents or your demand gen kind of role. It's well established, but the reason why I saw a lot of people are just not venturing out and becoming product-led is because there really wasn't a solid guide out there that could show people, here is what you need to take into account. Here are the frameworks that will at least get you there. Maybe not all the way, but at least show you, here's the road to becoming a product-led business, and here's what you need to watch out for and some of the mistakes you need to avoid. Because as Rob Walling, former CEO of Drip, would say, like, freemium is like a samurai sword. If you don't know what you're doing, you could easily chop your arm off. And so it sounds like a terrible visual image for some people, but it's really true. If you don't know what you're doing, it can be very dangerous because it's your customer acquisition model you're playing with, it's your revenue model, and there is just a lot at risk whenever you go down the product-led route.
Got it. So when you did the course, so there is obviously there is a connect between the course that you built earlier and the book that you wrote now. What is it that you wanted to achieve with the book, which you could not achieve with the course?
I think for the bigger part of it, it was just depth. In a course, you can only cover so much. And whenever you're writing a book, especially when you're trying to learn, I think from an author perspective, it sounds selfish, but I have been the biggest benefactor of writing this book even before its launch. I'm not talking financial whatsoever. I'm just talking about clarity. If you want to really clarify how something works, simply write a book about it. It will honestly help you in anything you're doing to really just truly understand what it is all about. And so I think for myself, I realized that when I created the course, I was scraping the surface on an iceberg. Like, we all know the iceberg theory. It's like you'll see that 10% at the top, and then the 90% down is below. It's massive. And so I got excited when I created the course and I saw that, oh man, there is so much more to this that even I need to go in and just learn as much as I can. So the book was really just me trying to dive deeper and kind of bring some of those learnings from different places.
Wonderful. I mean, this is possibly the most honest confession of a writer that is out there. I can see that you have structured the book in three parts. And how did you think of structuring it the way you did?
Yeah, so that was something I played around with quite a bit, because as I was building the book, I started getting more of a process around how you could structure product-led growth, like what is the foundation of product-led growth, as well as how do you build that optimization engine within your business. And so initially, I started with a good old table of contents and basically had a bunch of different chapters that I was going to do, like one chapter a week. It was going to be a blog post. And so I that's how I started, really. I got the wheels running or rolling whenever I basically just created a blog post a week that was on the table of contents. And so that's how I started. It just got messy after about maybe a month and a half, 2 months into it, where I realized, okay, like some things I have to mention over and over again because this is a chapter, and if I'm going to make a blog post that actually makes sense, you know, there has to be some redundancy. So yeah, needless to say, I think I probably went about it the wrong way multiple times, but it was something that I felt like I kind of learned just a lot more about that whole process of how do you go about writing a book. But that was a long-winded answer to your question.
No, this is good, because so one question that comes from this, what you just now told me, that were you also discussing it with some of the practitioners of product-led growth? I mean, many of these people are your friends. They have been on your in your summit. So did you get inputs as you were working on this?
Yeah, so I was trying to be pretty proactive about getting inputs. And so whenever I was doing the blog post, that was really great for me to just see like what actually resonated most with people and what really kind of got people to move them to action. And so that was part of my learning experience. Initially, it started with a blog post, but then after a point where I realized, like, all right, this isn't sustainable, I need to change up my approach, then I started going into my product-led growth community and just asking a lot of great questions. So for a really long period of time, which probably not too long in the greater scheme of things, but let's say 2 months, I was doing a question a day in the community. And that was how I fueled my learning. And also, whenever I accept someone into this community, I always ask them, like, what are their top two questions about product-led growth? And so I have a lot of input from a lot of different people in the product-led growth space. And so what that's allowed me to do is really just keep my finger on the dial around, like, what are the big things I need to cover in this book? What are people struggling the most about? Like, what are those most common questions? And what are they answering whenever I ask them these same questions? So that's how I went about it.
So one of the common perception about product-led growth is essentially around the free trial, freemium, demo. That's part of the discourse. What is your advice? What is it that you tell in the book about how to go about choosing the right option?
Yeah, so whether you go down the free trial, freemium, or demo route, there is so much you really need to think about. And a lot of it just comes down to your product and your market. And so those are the two biggest factors. Obviously, I could go into this and talk to you for hours about which decision to do. But at the end of the day, one of the two biggest things are just your market and then your time to value. So time to value, what I mean by that is just how quickly can someone experience the value of your product? So if you're using like examples that everyone knows, like Netflix or Spotify, I know those aren't software products. Specifically, they're more subscriptions and content, but they use the product-led growth approach. And so those companies, when you sign up for them, you can very quickly see like what is the overall value of the product pretty quickly. And so that's perfect for whether a free trial or freemium model. Where I see the demo model and the sales-led approach still work really, really well is where you're selling to enterprises and there's just really long sales cycles, buying processes in place that you need to adhere to. And the product itself takes a really long time to actually use. So when it's that, I always kind of tell people, stay with sales-led for the most part.
So essentially what I hear you say is that if it is something where people can experience the product quickly, go for a free trial or a freemium model. But if it is a long drawn enterprise kind of pitch, the demo would be possibly a sales-led process.
Yep, absolutely. And like the other part too there is just the market. So like if you're in a very new space, you're creating a new category, a sales-led option is not a bad idea because you really do need to understand like what are those people's objections? What do they care most about? What gets them excited? And you can use those inputs to really build it into your product and eventually build a self-service model. But if you're just starting your business, you really do need to have that sales-led approach. But as your company progresses and as your space grows and you get more competitors, it really becomes a no-brainer where you need to have that product-led approach because if your customer acquisition model isn't dialed in, you're just going to get your lunch eaten because people can acquire customers cheaper, they can charge lower, and at the end of the day, the customer wins. The lower price, the better products. But that's how all markets work. You just look at any commodity. As SaaS is a race to a commodity. It's just you have a limited amount of time before that happens in your space.
Let's take a short break. When we come back, we will ask if the length of the trial has any impact on user acquisition.
You are listening to a Show How To audio original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences.
Welcome back to this insightful discussion with Wesley Bush, author of Product-Led Growth, How to Build a Product That Sells Itself. Does the length of the trial have any impact on user acquisition? Let's find out.
Thomas Tunguz wrote about his, I think he did a presentation at Saster, and he said that they did a survey and they found no impact of the length of the free trial on the actual purchase. What is your view on that?
Yeah, at the end of the day, I found a lot of the same findings through what I've worked with my clients. And so typically, I find a lot of companies will have a really long free trial because they think, oh, someone needs that amount of time to actually experience the value of the product. Sometimes it's warranted. Most times it's just not. Some people can find out the value of your product very quickly. And so whenever it comes to someone's motivation to sign up for your product, yeah, like you want to try the product. At the end of the day, if you give them 7 days or 1 day or 14 days, they're still able to try the product. It's just depending on how someone experiences value in your product, it might just take them a longer period of time. And so I'm also finding that if you do have a product where, let's say, the time to value might be a little bit longer, sometimes freemium model is actually really powerful because you're not having that company-centric view of like, okay, we're setting this arbitrary timeline for you to get your stuff together and figure out how to use our product. Whereas from a user-centric perspective with a freemium model, it's really just giving people the timeline to understand the product. A perfect example of this would be, let's say if Drift had a free trial. You sign up for Drift, you install it on your website, and then within 14 days, you have 3 conversations on your website. It's like, was that really enough to get you to buy the product or not? Have you changed your philosophy to actually starting conversations on your website? It's like, probably not, because you just set that really arbitrary limit. And so sometimes with a free trial, it's just like freemium wins out because there is a lot more time for someone to understand the value. And maybe it's by the 100th chat someone has had that they really say, oh, you know what? I get the value of this. And now we actually have a team member to handle all these talks, maybe for part-time or something at that point. So yeah, it's just not forcing the relationship at all.
Your chapter on audience, where you ask, do you have a top-down or bottom-up selling strategy? What is the view that you are putting across there?
Okay, yeah. So the difference between top-down and bottom-up really just comes down to how do you approach your market? So if, let's say, you have a top-down selling strategy, it's typically you're going after the executives in companies. And that is a very traditional approach to growing your business, where you just try go after the people at the top, because those are the decision makers that we've all been told. The people with the deep pockets. If you want to sell something expensive, you go after those people. But the bottoms-up approach is where we're seeing a lot of companies like Slack or Expensify use to really grow their business, because the decision maker has evolved. And now people who are just working, whether it's maybe middle management, or it doesn't even have to be management, they actually have a lot of the buying power. And so the reason why product-led growth adapts so well to a bottom-up selling strategy is because the person you are typically getting to use the free trial or freemium model is the end user. They're the ones using it, getting up to speed and understanding how to use it. For instance, if let's say you had a very technical product that's all about business intelligence and you have a free trial and you're trying to sign up executives, these executives don't know anything about the technical jargon about business intelligence. What they want, the key outcome they want, is those reports. But they're not going to get those reports unless you actually would have gone after, let's say, the business analysis. Right. And that person is like the brains, they know it. It's the program's easy to them. They sleep and they dream about dashboards. Yeah. They're amazing at building it. And so that person gets excited when they sign up for your product. Mm. They understand the value. They love it. But that executive is bewildered. They're like, I don't get this. I don't see value. So right. You really just have to have that bottoms-up approach if you use product-led growth.
Wonderful. So we'll move on to the second part of your book, where you talk about building the foundation. And I have two things to ask. One is, what are the building blocks of a product-led foundation? And the other thing is, you talk about most common mistakes new products make. So tell us about the mistakes you see people who are trying to take this path are making.
Absolutely. So whenever it comes to building your product-led foundation, there are just 3 things you really need to have in order. Now, the first one is just understanding your value. The next one is just communicating that value to your customer in a way that they can actually understand it. And the last one is delivering your value and really just making sure you come full circle. Like, you are promising someone this amazing product and value. Can you deliver on it? And that in itself is why product-led businesses are booming, because so many companies are out there promising their potential customers the world. And then they sign up for the product and it's a terrible experience. It's frustrating to use. And so that is why whenever it comes to building a product-led business, you need to become just obsessive almost about making sure that you can deliver on your value as quickly as possible. And it really all comes down to, do you understand your value in the first place? And that's where I find a lot of people just take a surface level approach. They'll look at, okay, let's say you sell, let's go back to that live chat example. Okay, you sell live chat. So in that case, your functional outcome would be, okay, we're going to help you get some leads. But there's also the social and emotional outcome that people can really buy the product from you for that specific reason. And so for emotional outcome, that might be something like, hey, now that I am using the product, I have a lot more leads. And what does that make you feel like? That makes you feel amazing. It may be at ease. You're going to hit your quota for this month, which is a great feeling. And then from social, you're going to look like this rock star who just found a new lead source to get, maybe it's 100, maybe it's 1,000 new leads every single month. And so when you're trying to understand your value, you really need to look at, like, what are those functional, emotional, and then the social parts of the product that you're really selling to people. And so whenever it comes down to, like, what are those most common mistakes that people make, it really comes down to people just not fully understanding their value. And that's a big problem, because as you can see, if you can't communicate your value, that comes down to because you didn't understand it. And same thing with delivering on it. It has to really just have that one piece in place, which is why it's the most important to just understand your value. And then it becomes easier to communicate and then deliver on that value.
Wonderful. We will move on to the most interesting section, I think, which is about growing, right? So everybody is trying to grow and everybody wants to, in your words, ignite their growth engine. You talk about a framework, the bowling alley framework. I mean, I have gone through it, but I would still like you to give an overview of how you came about the framework and what does it do?
Yeah, so I came about this framework, you're going to guess, but playing bowling. So I had a pretty bad game playing bowling, and I then looked at someone else who just put up bumpers, and I was like, you know, that's like cheating. But then I, a couple of days later, I thought a little bit more about it. I'm like, why can't we do that for onboarding? It makes perfect sense now. And so I really do think that you can treat your onboarding just like bowling in a lot of ways with your bumpers. And so it got me thinking a little bit more about just like how far I could push this analogy. And whenever we think about like, what is that key outcome? It's really getting the strike. And so, or maybe even just knocking down a pin or two. I'm happy when that happens too. But whenever we think about that and we compare it to like, what is that outcome we want someone to experience in our product? I just say it's the same thing. That's what we want to drive people towards. And in order to get there, we really need to think about like, what is that shortest distance we could get? And in bowling, it's the same thing. It's that straight line down the middle. That's where we want to drive people towards. And so the problem is that so many products, there is just a lot of excess. And we're taking people on detours. And there may be features that are totally relevant to someone, maybe on their 10th time they're logging into the product, not mission critical when they first jump in and start using your product. And so there's just often a lot of detours, which distracts your users. And then they go into the gutter and they get lost. They never come back. And so that's where you need to have two bumpers to really keep people on track. The first one, the most important bumper you need to have is your product bumper. And so that's really just gearing your product to bump people in the right place. Now, whether that's using in-app tooltips or product tours and really just creating that experience where the only thing someone can do, just like a landing page, is sign up or do one specific action. By making it so simple for people to get onboarded, you can really make sure that the majority of people who sign up get to experience that value. And then God forbid, if they do leave that experience, then you can catch them with a conversational bumper, whether that's an email, SMS. It's totally up to you, but you just want to try and bring them back from both angles, whether they leave your product or not, and you just drive towards that successful outcome.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
So tell us where people can connect with you and where they can find the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find the book at productledbook.com, or you could just head on over to productled.com and you'll find everything there and more. So you can find me on LinkedIn. Just type in Wes Bush and look for the person with the yellow background. There's not too many out there.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Wesley. Have a wonderful day and thank you so much for making time. I really appreciate it.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next, another exciting episode of Bits About Books with Murugan Kathirvelu.
When I came, after 15 years of selling into corporates for big brands, when I came to a startup and I started meeting customers, and then I realized that every customer, my contacts were willing to meet me, but they were not ready to give business to me. They were ready to talk anything other than business because the brand is not known, what value you bring, we don't know how to. So I took many things for granted. My brand gave that, you know, advantage to me. When I used to sell a big brand, customer has got a perceptional value of the brand and he directly jumps into this kind of sales, his buying process, which did not happen. You know, it took some time, probably I would say that, you know, 4 to 5 months to, you know, for me to realize why these meetings are happening, because of the contact I had with a long time, but why these leads are not coming up. So this is something that I had to calibrate myself to the new, you know, situation. And here I am, unknown brand. People don't know how it will perform.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This Show How To Original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy by Show How To Audio. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and Rajiv Aditya, and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time, and have a wonderful day.